Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Tuesday, November 24th. I'm Ray Graff. It's the Copyright Forum today, and joining us, Paul Rapp and Polly Law. They are on the line to answer your questions about protecting your writing, your music, your art. If you have a question about copyright law or what's in the public domain, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or, of course, you could email your questions to voxpop@wamc.org. voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Polly and Paul are here to help you protect your intellectual property, such as it is. It's all coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Today it's the Copyright Forum, and to answer your questions, we have Paul Rapp, an intellectual property lawyer and writer. He represents musicians, writers, fine artists, and businesses involved in the creative economy. He lectures widely on intellectual property issues. Also here, Polly Law, past president of the Graphic Artists Guild, an organization focused on the rights of artists. She is a designer, illustrator, and artist whose works are in numerous private collections and is represented by galleries in Rhinebeck, New York, along with Provincetown and Nantucket, Massachusetts. You got a question about intellectual property? Give us a call right now. 800-348-2551 is the number. 1-800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org. But the number here is 800-348-2551. Polly Law, we'll start with you. Welcome back. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Ray, and everyone else out there listening.
How is the pandemic treating Polly Law?
Oh, man. It was a rough summer. My day job just ended for the year, and we were slammed all season.
Well, you know, you probably have some time to do some fine work, though, right? Some good art.
Yes, yes. Now I concentrate on my artwork.
It could be a productive time. Although I've heard that many artists are sort of clamped down emotionally and intellectually by the pandemic and haven't been turning stuff out. But I've talked to musicians who said, I've done a lot of work during this pandemic.
Yeah. I have not been very inspired, but things are starting to loosen up a little bit. So I'm optimistic.
Oh, good for you. And speaking of optimistic, we have Paul Rapp with us, who's always a ray of sunshine on this program. Paul Rapp, how you doing, man?
Oh, it's sunny out. It's beautiful.
You see, that's...
I'm happy.
That's what we're paying for, that optimistic outlook. What's been new with you?
Nothing. Let's see. The swimming pool opened yesterday at the YMCA in Kingston, so that's a positive thing.
There's enough bleach in there to kill anything.
Nice.
So.
Oh, not anymore, though. They fixed it. It's like it's brand new. It's brand new.
Oh, good.
And,
good.
And so, yeah, so that's great. And so, you know, shout out to the YMCA in Kingston. Other than that, I'm actually keeping busy. I mean, everything kind of seemed to stop around March or April. And then, you know, various clients realized that they got to reinvent themselves in order to survive.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm writing like more terms of service for new websites than I've ever written.
It's
no fun. I mean, you write these things, you know, and with the almost certainty that no one is ever going to read them, you know.
Yeah, I know what you mean. You know, speaking
but you
of,
gotta have them
speaking
you know.
Of changing the paradigm a little bit. I sent you a link, and I have no idea if you want to even touch this, but there's this service called Twitch that Amazon bought. And as I understand it, this was kind of a gamer's thing. And during the pandemic, it has now gained 80% more subscribers. I think it's about 40 million or something like that. But there's a lot of music streaming going on. And there was a big there is a continuing brouhaha about licensing rights. And I guess Twitch isn't too good about responding to letters.
It's my understanding that they got some nasty grams from the recording industry and from the music publishing industry. And rather than fight them or try to work out a deal, they just went and removed like hundreds of thousands of their users' posts, which I don't think is going to, you know, thrill the users very much. I mean, Twitch hasn't been around that long, and I really don't know what it does. I do know that AOC, like a month ago or so, announced that she was going to go on and play some video game on Twitch, while doing so, she was going to like talk up, you know, the election.
Yeah,
and she had something like 400,000 people watching.
Well, that's pretty impressive.
And everybody said, "Oh, this is going to be the golden age of Twitch," and now Twitch appears to have just shot itself in the foot. But it's weird.
Well, money talks. As I understand it, they recently launched something called Soundtrack, which I think is independent music, not licensed by the big labels. And I think the big labels want their fair share too. I guess there's some background music involved with video games and such. It's all new to me. But I'm sure on future programs you'll have there will be much more to come on this with the RIAA and the major industry groups. Paul Rapp, Polly Law are with us today. It's the Copyright Forum. Our number is 800-348-2551. We have an email here from Daniel. And Daniel says, I've written a small children's poem that references Winnie, Eeyore, and pinning a tail on the little guy. Do I need to get permission from E.E. Milne Estate just to mention them in the poem? The single mention of each above is in one stanza out of about 40 or so, and that is from
Unfortunately,
Daniel. Go ahead.
Well, Disney owns the rights to those characters now.
Oh.
Yeah, that's not to say that mentioning them is illegal. Mentioning them, Disney might think it's illegal. I would have to see the context, although it sounds to me like it's going to be fair use. You're making reference to them. Yeah, you know, you're making reference. I'd have to see it, but it doesn't sound, like infringement to me. Not that you won't get a nasty gram from Disney, but, you know, in situations like that, when somebody's being a copyright bully, you just go to social media and the press. And all of a sudden, everybody's reading your poem.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Polly Law and Paul Rapp on the Copyright Forum. We start out with Rick in Northwestern Connecticut. Rick, you're on.
Hi. So my question is, I guess, sort of a privacy one. And somebody took a photo of me. I was working at their home. This was in New York State. And I asked them if they were taking a photo. They said no. And then later on, I found out they had put the photo of me, my name, and the place I work for in the magazine without my permission.
Mm. Where was the photograph taken?
Yeah.
I was at their house in New York State.
Okay.
In their backyard working.
And this was for what kind of a magazine?
It was mostly just one of those free magazines with a lot of advertisements, and then they put in a couple of, like, fluff articles about different stuff.
And you were in there? You were in the photographer's yard?
Yes, I was working in their backyard, and they had their phone, and I didn't know if they were texting or taking a picture, and it turns out they were taking a picture of me.
Paul, why are you laughing?
Is it nude or something? I mean,
nice, Polly.
You know, it's something like this. It's, you know, do you have a, you know, if you were in your own yard and they took a picture, they, you know, you have a reasonable expectation of privacy, you know, in your yard. If they were taking it from the road in front of the house and got you, then, you know, even though you're maybe in their yard, you know, you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, from being seen from the street. But the question becomes, do you have an expectation of privacy in their yard? from them taking your picture? And I don't know the answer to that.
But, Paul,
I wonder. Yeah.
Taking a picture is one thing. Publishing it in a publication is another, right?
Well, if you're in a place where you don't have a reasonable expectation of privacy, it's fine.
They may argue that, you know, work for hire. He was hired.
I asked him if he was taking a picture of me, and he said no. So
right.
At that point, don't I have an expectation of privacy?
That's a good argument to make. I think so.
By the way, Rick, what were you doing? Are you a clown at a kid's party or something?
Well, I don't. This was a year or two ago.
Okay.
I'd rather not say.
All right.
I don't want to sue the guy or anything, but
right, fair enough.
I don't work for him anymore, I tell you that.
Okay. All right.
Were you an employee of his at the time, or were you like working for a lawn maintenance company or something, and that he had hired the company?
I was an employee of another company that he hired to do a job for him.
Okay.
Okay. And this wasn't used in the context of an advertisement, was it?
Well, that's the thing. It's a free magazine, and the articles are more just to get people to pick up the magazine with all the ads in it. And he runs pretty much the whole thing. So, I mean, it's sort of the whole magazine is, it's not really a magazine. It's just a book of ads with some articles in it.
Hmm. Okay.
Right.
Nobody pays for it.
Because they can't use your image for advertising without your consent. You know, if it's editorial in nature, they can. So this is a complex and interesting issue. And I've got to tell you, I don't know the answer. But it sounds, you know, I could argue on both sides of this.
A fascinating way to start the show, but we have to take a break here. Rick, thank you for the call. Paul Rapp, thank you for being with us. We'll be right back. The number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum is just getting started. We'll be right back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's the Copyright Forum. Polly Law is back, and Paul Rapp is back. They are on the line to answer your questions today. You know, I wrote you an email right before the show started, Paul Rapp, and said, hey, let's tackle this Twitch story. And you said, well, I prefer somebody's vault. What is that all about?
Wolfgang's Vault is a music site that sort of grew out of Bill Graham's archives from the Fillmore West and East.
Oh,
and they
yeah.
sell posters and T-shirts and all kinds of musical memorabilia, but they also sell streaming concerts
yep.
from Bill Graham's archives and elsewhere. And apparently they just started doing it without seeking licenses or permissions from the publishers or from the artists. Which strikes me as insane. You know, I mean, I'm as much of a, you know, free copyright person as there is, but you don't take a whole bunch of iconic concerts from, and, you know, we're talking The Who and the Rolling Stones
right.
and the Talking Heads. And so, you know, they get sued by a bunch of music publishers and a bunch of musicians. This case has been going on apparently for 5 years. And people have gone in and, you know, David Byrne testified and all these heavyweights testified saying, you know, this is in violation of my rights. It was a jury trial. The trial was winding up last month. And one of the jurors contacted the judge and said, you know, I'm really worried. I'm in this room for 12, you know, with 12 other people. And, you know, I'm just not excited about being here. I've got, you know, family, and I've got, you know, my parents are vulnerable, and I feel like I should be out taking care of them during the pandemic.
Yeah.
And the judge said, well, you know, there's nothing I can do about that. We're taking all the precautions we can, blah, 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 blah. The attorneys for both sides made their closing arguments. The jury went out and deliberated for 1 hour.
Oh, boy. They really wanted to get home.
They didn't ask to see a single exhibit or to have any testimony read back. And they came back and said, yes, it was infringement, and we're going to award the publishers and the musicians a total of $1,000 for each concert that was infringed.
That's not very much.
$1,000. Yeah, and you know, the damages could have gone up to $150,000 per infringed work.
Yeah.
And so, you know, after all of this, the music industry people and the musicians got to split something like $180,000.
Wow.
Which is a travesty.
Can they appeal that?
If you win, I don't think you can appeal.
Well, no, you can say that the damage award was contrary to the evidence. It's a hard, you know, appeals courts give judges and juries an extreme amount of leeway to make decisions. But I think the combination that the jury was only out for an hour, you know, and awarded this almost random and extremely low number, I think it's absolutely appealable. Yeah.
Huh. Very interesting. Paul Rapp is here. Polly Law is here. It is the Copyright Forum on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551 or the email address voxpop@wamc.org. Let's go to Karen. Karen, where are you calling from?
Oh, I'm calling from Bearsville, New York.
Lovely Bearsville. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, my question is, I've been making a whole series of artwork on a paint program on my computer, mainly just for fun, but I think I may decide to market them. And I can turn out quite a few. I might even do one a day, and I have quite a few of them. So I'm just wondering if this is something that I'm doing on a regular basis and constantly adding more. What is the best way to go about copywriting these?
A serial
copyright? I have hundreds of them. Or should I just pick which ones I want to copyright? But it'll still be a large group that'll be added to all the time.
Well, let's go back to basics. Your works were copyrighted the minute you finished them.
Right.
But you're talking about registering your copyright.
Yes.
Just to make that clear to everyone. Paul, do you think a serial copyright would be best, or
no? Because it's really not part of a. It's really, you know, you can't turn like a prolific artist into a publisher of a magazine. It would be nice. It would really be nice, especially in your situation. But, you know, what Polly's talking about, if you regularly put out a publication, you know, a serial of a publication, then, you know, you can register every 3 months everything you've published with one application. Unfortunately, I don't think this qualifies. And so what you're left with, I would pick out the ones that you think are the best and the most valuable and the most commercial, and you can register them 10 at a time with the Copyright Office. I mean, that's still going to get expensive. Polly, didn't the fees just go up again?
Yes.
It used to be 55 for a group. Now it's like 75
or
something like that.
The last thing I knew was 65, and you're saying it may be 75.
Well, that was for an individual piece.
That's right. That's right. And for a group registration, it was, I think you're right. I think it might be 65. And then, you know, you have all that fun with the copyright registration site, which is, you know.
Yeah, but if you're doing it often, you'll get to be a real whiz at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charge other people to do it for them.
Yeah. But I think that's your only, you know, only alternative. But yeah, I wouldn't go crazy with it until you really start selling. And when it becomes, economically feasible to do it, I would probably hold off until then.
Paul, so I have a question for you.
Yeah.
Say she had a Patreon site, and part of the deal with Patreon is that she would send her backers twice a year a piece of art. Does that then become a serial publication?
I have a hard time thinking that it would. You'd have to get into the definition on the copyright side of what a serial is, but I think it just doesn't sound like a fit to me, and I don't know if you'd be able to fastball it by the copyright examiners either. I think they would want to see a publication. If you were putting out an art book, every 3 months that contained everything that you had, everything that you'd made in the previous 3 months, and had people subscribing to it, like with a Patreon model or something like that, then you might have something. But it sounds like you're jumping through an awful lot of hoops for, a benefit that might not be worth the time and energy,
The number here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. It's the Copyright Forum with Polly Law and Paul Rapp. Al is in Clifton Park. Hello, Al.
Hey, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking a call. I got two questions. They're quick. You can address either, or both. One, a friend of mine bought a record called Spill the Wine in 1970 lost it. 30 years later, he downloaded it from Napster, wondering how criminal that act could be. Number two, who pays royalties for singing Happy Birthday?
That's a great question, Al. All right, well, you want to hang on the line or you want to go?
I'll hang on the line, but in case you got any other questions.
I'm sure Paul will want to cross-examine you. All right, go ahead, Paul Rapp.
Yeah, well, I mean, downloading Spill the Wine, which I just heard on the radio yesterday, and it remains one of the weirdest freaking singles in the history of Top 40 radio.
Thank you for saying freaking. I appreciate it, Paul.
I'm choosing my words carefully.
Nice.
Because radio. And downloading it from Napster, or from, wherever these days where you can get, free music, you're not going to get in very much trouble. And those days are gone anyways, because we have Spotify and you can listen to whatever you want, whenever you want. Hypothetically, you could get into a bunch of trouble, but the days of those lawsuits is long gone. And in terms of Happy Birthday, I'm pretty sure Happy Birthday has been liberated, hasn't it?
Has it?
It's been declared in the public domain.
Yep.
So nobody gets paid, and that's fairly recent. That's in the last couple of years. I think Warner Brothers Music was getting a couple of million a year in royalty payments for use of the song in films and elsewhere, and then a bunch of scholars got in and proved that it was based on a folk tune from the 1890s, and some sisters wrote some lyrics to it in like 1910, and got a court to actually declare, or maybe Warner's just admitted, I don't recall, that it was in the public domain. So nobody's making money on Happy Birthday.
Wow, did Warner have to pay back all the entities that it sued and everything else?
I don't know if anybody went after them for back royalties.
Well, Al, that was a very interesting call. Thank you. Yeah, go ahead, Paul. Finish it up.
We're getting lots of interesting calls today. I'm like,
You seem surprised.
I'm working hard.
Yeah, our number's 800-348.
Me and Polly are working it today.
Well, you're sitting on your couch enjoying yourself, so we'll go to another call. Larry in New Paltz. Larry, you're on.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call. One comment on the earlier caller and the issue with respect to serial works of art. You may have said this when I was dialing in, but one of the other pieces of advice that I would have offered was to tell her to mark things with a copyright notice. It's cheap and easy and free.
It doesn't give you the protections that registering the copyright gives you.
That's true, but it's free.
Yeah, it is free, and it does serve notice that you're at least cognizant of copyright. So you're not going to be an easy mark.
But, you know, depending on the context of the art, too, I mean, I never recommend anyone deface their art in order to let the world know the fairly obvious fact that, you know, that the work is your copyrighted property. So if there's a way to do it,
It depends on the context in which the art is presented. If it's in a book, you can just put a notice in the front of the book or on something other than the art. But, yeah, the other thing that I wanted to mention was with respect to the privacy issue and the gentleman in the backyard being photographed.
Yeah.
I do believe there is, in fact, a specific statute in New York which prohibits you from making commercial use of anyone's image without their permission.
Yep. But that's why I asked if it was advertising, because commercial use in that it's a civil rights law. What is it? 49B or something like that. New York State civil rights law. They say commercial use, and that's been interpreted very narrowly to mean advertising. So, you know, if it's in a magazine that makes money, but it's not an advertisement, that doesn't count. So that's why I pursued that. Was it in an advertisement? Because if it was, he'd definitely have something, but it doesn't sound like it was.
Larry, thank you very much for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Another person from New Paltz. Lily, you're on.
Hi, I have a question about royalties. I was in a movie in the 90s. It was, you know, very low budget. I had a 1% interest in the movie as part of my contract, and the movie was sold without my knowledge, and the movie is doing actually very well as kind of a cult movie. And so I just wondered what my rights were there.
Are you no longer receiving royalties?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Are you no longer receiving royalties?
No, as soon as the movie was sold, the producer, director, writer said, you know, you lose your rights when I stop. You've lost your rights now that I've sold it.
Oh, boy.
I don't think so. You know, unless there was something in the contract that you signed that said that. But I can't imagine that's you know, when you sell a property like this, the obligations go with the property. And so. I think you could pursue. I think you certainly have a right to pursue royalties.
And would that be retroactive?
Yes. Yes, I believe it would be.
Mm.
Thank you very much.
Well, thanks a lot. And, you know, just a note for our callers. I know sometimes you got to be on the speakerphone if you're driving. But Zach, the engineer, pretty much has an aneurysm every time the noise level is that high. So if there he goes. All right, get off the ledge, Zach. It's going to be all right. So if you can, just try to use the handset when possible. Obviously, be safe. Let's go to Sienna in Hudson. Sienna, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
Yes. Hi. So my question is, I made some artwork for a bunch of labels for some friends that were making their own products, and they weren't selling them. It wasn't a commercial enterprise. But since then, it's been some years ago, I found out that they're marketing their products internationally with my labels. And I was contacted at one point in time and asked to sign a release. But I didn't do it because I felt sort of insulted by it. And I never signed anything, but I'm wondering if they're making a profit using my images for their products, do I have some sort of recourse?
Yeah. If you did not sign anything, you know, giving or selling them your rights, then you still retain your copyright in that image. In those images.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I figured.
Paul.
Yeah, I agree. I think you've got something. I think they, you know, most likely owe you money. Do you still have the images? Do you still have the originals or digital scans of the images?
I believe so. I actually made original drawings, which I left with them. I think they made the product labels, you know, they sent to somebody else, but with my artwork and text as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
Try to find your documentation. Try to find anything you have, preliminary sketches, any written communication you had with them, and get it all together and talk to a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, at some point, you probably would want to, you know, register the copyrights to them in your name, because that is a prerequisite to going to court. If you're not registered, even though you own the copyright, if it's not registered, you can't go to court. And, you know, if you threaten someone going to court, if their lawyer knows what they're doing, the first thing they're going to want to see is the registration certificate. You'll want to do that. But I think there might be statute of limitations issues, and that goes actually for the film as well. Without knowing the specific facts, you may be limited in the amount of time you can look back, or you may be foreclosed altogether. But, you know, a lawyer can tell you whether that, you know, the statute of limitations is going to come into play.
All right, Sienna, thanks. We have to take a break. Our number is 800-348-2551. The Copyright Forum with Paul Rapp and Polly Law. And we will open the email bag and get back to the calls momentarily. Vox Pop, the Copyright Forum, number is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, the email at voxpop@wamc.org. Polly Law and Paul Rapp are here and having a reasonably good time, I think, right?
Yes.
Wow, okay. This is an interesting email from Marianne in New Windsor. I read it in its entirety. Marianne writes, "As a career information systems professional of 30-plus years, I have now lived long enough and know enough about data integrity, network infrastructure, and data security challenges to see the gray area of personal data compilation by the social media and e-commerce giants now crossing the threshold from mere data as demographics to data as asset. At what point do you believe personal data will legally fall into the legal category as business property and then perhaps be protected much in the same way as intellectual property is by law? Gray area, I know, but a big challenge with important ramifications for future and probable new legislation crossing civil rights and technology/corporate law boundaries. Your opinion?" And that is from Marianne in New Windsor. Who wants that one first?
Take it, Polly.
Well, isn't it already sort of being done? I know that car manufacturers were stating that the information that the computer in your car, the car that you bought and paid for, it actually belongs to them. They still have been recording your driving. So, I think that threshold's already been passed. And considering how cavalier the social networks treat our personal data, how cavalierly they treat it, does not bode well.
Interesting. And Paul.
Well, Ray, what do you think?
Well, I think that if GM wants to somehow monetize the fact that I drove 87 miles an hour on the Northway, good luck.
Yeah.
Boy, that is a deep question, and I have to say I have done little or no work in databases as intellectual property. I understand that at this point, a database like this can be protected only by keeping it secret, that there's no, it's a, you know, it, that, you know, you just have to protect it. But once the cows are out of the barn, they're out of the barn. I also understand that some European countries protect databases statutorily, you know, much like a trademark or a copyright or a patent. You know, it's a fourth branch of intellectual property. It will likely get to the point at some point where Congress will pass a similar law.
Okay.
And, you know, and I haven't really looked at it enough to know whether I think it's a good or a bad thing. Because it is personal information. And the idea of someone else owning your information. Well, actually, I'm starting to think I don't like it. But
well, you're a free copyright kind of fella.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, your personal data for the people, man.
Yeah.
But a fabulous question, and I wish I could give a more nuanced answer than I just did.
A beautiful question. This one is from Sally, and I, you know, I'm going to leave the name of the company out here because this is such a prevalent thing. Sally writes, my nonprofit received notification from an organization, and I'll leave that name out. They're out of Canada. The notification said we had unauthorized use of several photos on our website, required payment of $525 to resolve the issue. Taking down the photos, which we have done, would not be sufficient. Is this legitimate or a scam? We are a very small foundation giving away money, not making any money, so I wonder what the damages could be. And that's from Sally. All right, Paul.
Funny, I've had experience with this recently.
Yes.
And actually, I get calls like every other week. These are copyright trolls. Chances are your use was unauthorized. It was on a small website. I think, as you said, you took it down as soon as they contacted you. They will continue to bother you with increasingly threatening letters. But it's almost certain that they are not going to sue you for a $525 license. They would probably,
Go ahead, Polly.
Oh, well, they probably have not been retained by the photographer. They're probably just acting on their own.
No, I mean, if photographers do, you know, put their, I mean, it's possible that this is just jive. But, you know, they're looking for low-hanging fruit. They're looking for quick money. They probably, if they are retained by the photographer, they're going to get a percentage of what they bring in. And so for a $525 license, they're not going to put a whole lot of effort into it. If they were going to go to court, it would cost them $450 in the filing fee alone to file a lawsuit. And yeah, if they win, they could conceivably get that back. But you know, they're not going to sue over that. You know, if you want to clear your conscience, you know, offer them $50 or $100, and then tell them to go away.
All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 is the number. Ken is in Massachusetts. Ken, you're on.
Yeah, I wanted to know if I could.
I'm sorry, say it again.
Copyright. I wanted to know if I could copyright a logo and a motto.
A motto and a logo.
That's more trademark.
Yeah. Yeah, those are things that you would trademark. Copywriting a short phrase is probably not going to work. It probably doesn't have, the Copyright Office is going to say it doesn't have the requisite creativity to warrant a copyright. A logo, if it's fairly elaborate, you might be able to, but they could turn it down. The one thing the copyright examiners are do look for is whether someone's trying to get a trademark on the cheap, because the trademark's going to cost hundreds of dollars and a copyright is going to cost dozens.
Why is that, by the way? Why the disparity in cost?
Because the copyright process, they just look at what comes in and they say, is this the sort of thing we grant copyright for? And they don't go and search to see if somebody is registered the copyright to something similar. So, you know, the ministerial act of granting a copyright registration is very light. Mm-hmm. With a trademark, they do go in and see if there's a similar trademark out there for similar goods or services, including logos, including designs, you know, and it's a pretty rigorous process that the examiners go through. So that kind of explains, you know, why a trademark costs more than a copyright.
Well, it's also because when you register the copyright on a piece, it's an original piece. It is just that, and you are just protecting the rights to reproduce it. But a trademarked piece of work is part of the whole business. It represents the whole.
How do you go about it, though?
The whole trade. So you're not protecting the original piece of work. You're protecting the business.
But how do you begin the process?
Well, if you you can register a copyright at copyright.gov. You can register a trademark at USPTO.gov. Registering a copyright, you can do yourself. Registering a trademark, it's a little bit more complex. I'd recommend, hiring a professional to do it.
Just at the state level?
You could register, depending on your business, you could register the trademark on the state level, and that's very cheap, but it only will protect you in, you know, the state of Massachusetts. For some businesses, if it's a very localized business, that's all you need. If you're online, you know, and doing stuff on an interstate or international basis, you probably want a federal copyright.
Ken, thank you for the call. Now we jump over to North Adams. And Jeff, you're on.
Hi, how you doing, Ray?
Yeah, we're doing all right.
Good. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just had a question about, I wrote a song, a parody song about COVID-19 when all this started a few months ago. And I was just wondering if it's okay to go ahead and video myself singing that on Facebook or if I should copyright it.
You said a parody song. Is it all original? Is the melody original, or do you use a melody of a popular song?
I borrowed a melody from another song.
Okay. I mean,
the words, couldn't he?
Yeah, I mean, you could just copyright the words, although you probably want to copyright the entire song. You know, in order to do anything substantial with it, you'll need the permission of whoever owns the original melody, whoever the songwriter was. You'll need their permission. If you want to record yourself and put it on YouTube, go ahead and try. Sometimes publishers take those things down. Sometimes publishers leave those things up.
Go ahead, Paul.
Yeah, and so it's kind of luck of the draw by putting it up on Facebook or on social media. Is it a current popular song? It was, I think, what Polly was asking.
No,
question.
It's an old country western song.
Mm. How old? Mm.
And I don't know. It was probably recorded back in the 50s.
Yeah. Well, you're less likely to get stung and to get taken down if the song is older. I'd go ahead and do it. If you want to register the copyright, you can try. It might not be valid, but what the heck.
Well, Jeff, thanks a lot for that one. This email came in from Chris, a New York resident currently trapped in Arizona because of ground quarantine issues. This is what Chris writes. Our private computer club in a gated community produces a Zoom meeting every week. We clip videos from various podcasts and share them on Zoom. Those clips contain reviews of products, other manufacturers, and tutorials on technical equipment. Do we have to obtain permission or pay for each of the clips we use? And that's from Chris out of New York via Arizona.
I don't think so. For a private Zoom meeting?
It's not going anywhere, but just amongst yourselves.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sounds like a lot of it would be, you know, would be fair use, even if that were not true. But if it's a closed meeting, you know, among friends, you know, by invitation, I think you're probably okay. It's one of those situations where technically, hyper-technically, it might be considered some kind of infringement, but geez, you know, no harm, no foul.
Well, this is a good one from Tim, and this has popped up over the last year or two. Tim says, I have a question about copyrights and music. Some politicians use songs at their events. I've heard some artists issuing cease and desist orders in regard to use of their music. I've heard that if the event is in a venue that the artist performed at, then they cannot prevent their music from being used. Could you expand on this? We only have about a minute here. That's from Tim in Selkirk.
Yeah, that's not true. Whether the artist performed in the venue is irrelevant. And I think this is going to wash out. I think some of these have been elevated now to lawsuits. I think John Fogerty actually took that step to stop Trump from using Fortunate Son. But it really is going to depend on if it's an integral part of the rally, if it's a message, if it implies that the artist is endorsing the candidate, then I think, you know, it can be stopped. If it's just used as sort of incidental background music while people are coming in and coming out, probably not. But
right.
The courts have yet to rule on that, and I'm going to be very interested to see when they do what they say.
But wouldn't that be covered under the arena's ASCAP license?
Only about 15
probably
seconds.
Probably if it's background music. But if it's meant for a message that implies an endorsement of the candidate or a part of the candidate's message, that's something different, and that's not going to be covered by ASCAP BMI licenses.
All right, that's where we will leave it today. Polly Law, thank you for being here.
Wow, we're done so soon.
Yeah, well, we'll do it again really soon. Thank you very much. Hopefully one of these years you guys can come back to the studio. Paul Rapp, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, and thanks for those great questions.
All
this
right.
was a good one.
We will do it again soon. Support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canajoharie, presenting Judge Magazine, late 19th century politics, presidents, and political cartoons, through December 30th, arkellmuseum.org. Nine Pin Cider Works, Albany, New York Farm Cidery with Outdoor Cafe, open 7 days, offering local hard cider, merchandise, and apparel, also available through shipping, ninepincider.com. Agricultural Stewardship Association, helping people conserve farmland in the Upper Hudson Valley. We conserve good farmland for good forever, agstewardship.org. At Empire Exhibits and Displays, providing design, production, and project management services for museums, events, and commercial interiors, featuring acrylic barriers, dividers, and custom safety options, empireexhibits.com. Once again, thanks to Polly Law and Paul Rapp for joining us today. Thank you for joining us and for your questions. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. You know, it's tough to get people willingly to come in and answer the phones for this program. And yet, every day someone volunteers, and Ashley Lindsay did it today. I get the feeling she may have been coerced, but she did it anyway. So thank you, Ashley. Our producer's Jackie Orchard. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, it's Pets und Vets. Right now, stand by for the book show.